Welcome to our continuing podcast series from IFR Magazine. IFR recently spoke with Charlie Richardson, a veteran controller and controller's instructor, about what happens when screens go dark at a major control center. Here's Glenn Pugh.
Tell everybody who you are and what you do.
I'm a retired center controller, supervisor, and manager. And I guess the highlight of my FAA career was I was a naval liaison officer for about 5 years. I worked closely with the Navy. In fact, I lived on a naval station at the Roosevelt Road, which has since closed. As far as my civilian aviation, I was a flight instructor of both instruments and motor engine.
What's your current role?
Okay, at Memphis Center, I just walked across the hall and became a contractor after I retired. And what I do, I instructed for about 4 years, classroom and DISM, but I proceeded into a different area now, I guess you'd say, as a promotion. And what I do is I develop and maintain the control problems that you use to train the developmental controllers in the DISM.
So when you say you're an instructor, are you talking about a pilot instructor or a controller instructor?
Well, controller, developmental controllers.
Okay, well, we wanted to talk specifically about something called ATC-0. Could you define that for us?
Okay, that's a term cooked up by the FAA, and it's used internally to indicate to anyone that talking to within the FAA that means a particular facility, for some reason or other, is inoperative. It could be a hurricane has destroyed it or power failure or whatever. But anyhow, that facility is going belly up.
So how is the contingency for ATC-0 supposed to work?
Let's take Memphis Center, for instance, that they did have a problem last month, and in September it would be, I guess. And they had a complete communications failure due to a company that provides the communication for the center located about 2 miles from Memphis Center. Anyhow, they had a switch called a controller switch that went out, and apparently they either didn't have a backup or it didn't work. At any rate, the Memphis Center was unable to communicate on the interphone to pilots. Their part of their radar stayed up. I think they had 3 radar sites that went down. But no matter how much technology you have, if you don't have communications, it's all nil.
Wow.
So anyhow, what was supposed to happen in this case, since Memphis Center couldn't control traffic, the adjacent centers, being 5 of them surrounding us, are supposed to take the airspace at flight level 240 and above. The approach control that's scattered throughout Memphis Center airspace is supposed to take the airspace up to, including flight level 230, and everything runs smoothly. That's the way it's supposed to work.
What kind of training do controllers receive to deal with an ATC-0 situation?
Well, they have an annual classroom review of the letter of agreement that set this up, and they can talk about it, but that's about it. There's nothing in the simulator that they can train on or this sort of thing. So mainly it's ATC-0 is on a document and letter of agreements. And that's about it.
Is there even any training regarding, for as far as controllers are concerned, in partial equipment failures?
Yes, they get extensive training during their radar training. That's called Stage 4, which is the last portion of their training when they become a full-fledged controller. And radar and radio simulation is conducted during that time.
And how often are these procedures practiced?
Up to this year, it's been done annually, but due to the large amount of controllers that we're training now on day shift and evening shift, the simulator is tied up all the time. So this year, they was unable to conduct that training.
If you're practicing these once a year, how many times in your career have you experienced ATC-0?
Unfortunately, 2 times. The first one was about 8 years ago, and that was caused here at Memphis Center by a complete power failure, and they have 2 diesels and some batteries for a backup. And the battery is supposed to kick in immediately, which they did, and then the generators come up in a couple of minutes. The only problem, all of this power funneled through the portion that was out, so they didn't have any power at all. Supposedly, there were several other centers that had a similar problem, but that has been corrected since then.
it seems intuitively that a controller with many years of experience would do a little bit better in these situations. Do you find that to be the case? How much does controller experience factor into equipment failures?
Well, naturally, experience in any field would give you a leg up, so to speak. And during the last, for instance, during the last outage in September, one of the controllers that did have frequencies, I'd say about 90% of the frequencies and communication went out, so there were a few sectors that were still operational. And those that were operational took over some other airspace. In other words, just one controller that was controlling traffic from the surface to 230 did what we call a quick look feature, and he could see the sector right above him that controlled traffic at 240 and above, and he did quick look that sector. He could see the traffic. He coordinated with the sectors working on that sector, sent one of his aircraft over that he could talk to. Of course, he was working normally, and transmitted on, had that pilot transmit on the frequency and told all those aircraft to come back over to his frequency. So he basically, he was working two sectors at one time. So probably this was an experienced controller, I think about 20 years behind the boards. And you'd have to assume that probably a younger controller may not have thought about that or wouldn't been able to do it or wouldn't even tackle to do that.
All right. Well, let's get back to the Memphis Center outage that you had recently. What interesting stories of those events do you have for us?
The first one had happened about 8 years ago. Fortunately, it was all CAVU, the ceiling, and the visibility was unlimited. So basically, there wasn't a big disruption, a lot of confusion and whatnot, but the en route aircraft that was overflying the center just continued on because, they had TCAS that they was watching, and it was clear weather, and they attempted and eventually did contact someone else that would talk to them. The aircraft that was landing in Memphis Center, basically, even though they were up at in PCA, or whatever, say flight level 330, eventually they started their descent because they couldn't talk to anyone, and contacted the appropriate approach control eventually, whatever. But the outage we had in September, there was a lot of weather around, and to be honest, at this point in time, I haven't been able to find out exactly what happened to all the aircraft.
Well, it sounds like part of the contingency plan is to spread the load over local centers. Is that true?
Well, that's the way it's supposed to work, but in fact, it doesn't. In other words, let's say that Houston Center went down, for instance, and we're supposed to take airspace. It looks like it goes down a little bit south in New Orleans, for instance. And the only problem is we don't have radio coverage in that area, and we don't have landlines to talk to anyone. We couldn't talk to New Orleans Approach Control, for instance. We don't have landlines to those people. So we don't have radio coverage, or do we have radar coverage in that area. So really, we could not control traffic down there as it's set up to do. And that would be true for any center surrounding us. And that's exactly what happened when Memphis went out in September. The other centers did not take any of our space, ever, because they can't.
Wow. Do you see any improvements on the horizon where all this is concerned?
Not that I know of. It would be a huge cost factor to implement a procedure. In other words, let's say that they were realistic about taking a chunk of New Orleans airspace or Houston's airspace in case they went ATC zero, we would at all times have to have a means to get on their, what we call a rag site, a remote control air ground frequency that's located, probably got one at Macomb and I imagine at New Orleans and so forth. And we'd also have to have their radar sites down there rooted up to Memphis Center and be able to push a button and implement that immediately. And also, we'd have to have the controller workforce here taking an additional, probably two or three sectors. We'd have to have some controllers here at Memphis Center to handle that, and none of that exists.
Wow.
So I guess you could say ATC zero is a good plan, but it's just a plan in paper. I'm talking about when centers go out. Now, if approach control, for some reason, gets knocked out for a reason I mentioned before, for whatever reason, the centers can actually take over that airspace and continue operation. The centers are the big problem. Approach controls we can handle because a lot of these approach controls, you probably know, and pilots flying also know this, that if it's not a real, real busy terminal, they shut down usually ones in Memphis airspace around 11 local time in the evening and open up about 6 a.m. in the morning. So during that time, the center handles their airspace, so they're quite familiar with that airspace. In Memphis Center, there's only 4 approach controls that stays open during the 24 hours. That's Little Rock, Memphis, Nashville, and Fort Campbell. All the rest of them, which is probably, I'm going to guess, 10 or 12 approach controls, they shut down around 11 o'clock. So that part of ATC Zero does work. We can handle that.
And the parts that don't work specifically, in your view, are?
The centers. Mm-hmm. Just can't do it. You can't go deep inside to someone else's airspace like I used illustrated going all the way to South of New Orleans. Controllers aren't certified to control traffic in there. They're not familiar with that area. Even if they were, they don't have, like I said, communications or radar coverage down there. It doesn't exist. It would be a huge cost factor for the FAA to put in landlines that would sit there day in and day out, and it may not ever be used, or it could be used in 3 or 4 years. It would be a contingency, and that would be very, very expensive. I doubt if that's going to happen.
So right now, this is a potential problem, and sometimes actually a real problem, that doesn't really have an effective solution.
Well, perhaps if the FAA, I think they're thinking about going with the satellites and all that, it could be when they bring that system up, that's the way to go. They're thinking about getting rid of these huge, expensive radars, although I think DOD has rethought that since 9/11. But anyhow, if we go like the system they've got up in Alaska, I think they call it ADS-B, using satellites and whatnot, probably the system could be put in, it would work, but as it is, as of today, it's not a plausible system. It just doesn't work.
Very interesting. Well, thank you very much, Charlie, for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to IFR's conversation with veteran controller Charlie Richardson. To learn more about this and other topics important to instrument and accomplished pilots, subscribe to IFR Magazine. You can check it out on the web at www.ifr-magazine.com. Comments on this audio cast to audionews@appweb.com. Mike Blakeney reporting for IFR Magazine. Thanks for listening.